Hey, we want to tell you about a ministry that's really close to our hearts. Global Christian Relief. Around the world, our brothers and sisters are risking everything for Jesus, and often they're unseen and unheard. GCR exists to remind us that we're one church, one family, and that no believer should stand alone. They come alongside persecuted Christians with prayer, Bibles, and this is the thing, real help. Food, shelter, trauma care, so the church can endure and shine as a light for the gospel. When you give, you're not supporting a cause, you're standing with family.
For a long time, even after having kids, like if I felt like I let someone down or I did something that I'm ashamed of, I would physically hit myself.
Yeah.
I was so fresh. I was like, how could you do that? Like, what are you? You should have known better.
Hey, LC.
Hey, MC.
Oh, are we doing that?
Today.
Today we are?
Today we are.
So between Sundays.
Yes, with the Chandlers.
With the Chandlers. Dad joke of the episode?
Well, it's kind of funny. I was on this flight and I was, the flight attendant's coming through with the beverage service. And she said, would you like something to drink? And the lady beside me said, what are my options? And the flight attendant said, yes or no.
Get it? Was that the same flight where the guy next to me asked, how often do planes crash?
Yeah, and the flight attendant said once.
Once. So, I mean, I love that you love those. I love that you love those.
All right.
So,
what are we talking about?
I think you know. Because you're gonna carry this episode.
Gonna carry this.
Babe.
But I'm gonna talk more
than
you do, which is rare.
Is it though?
Is it rare?
Andrea, weigh in on this.
Who talks more?
We need you to hurry up and answer. We're filming.
She just said,
it's obviously you.
Obviously. Thank you. Obviously, Matt.
Wait. Like, you're saying, like, I preach for a living. I feel like that has to be divided from this.
No. Just you.
So, like, at a dinner, I'm going to talk more?
Yes.
Last night?
Yes.
I don't know. Here's what I think happens. I'm glad we're doing this.
He talks more.
I could tell I was talking and holding court a little bit, but you're
always holding court.
But you had your own little side conversation.
I did have
going
a side
on.
Conversation, but you hold court, and then I come in and I adjust the facts.
So get them if accurate. You're watching this, a good friend of ours says that Lauren is the New American Standard version of the Bible, and I'm like the Message.
Mm-hmm.
Like Lauren is precise,
word for word translation,
word for word, and I'm more like this is the idea.
Mm-hmm.
But I still don't think
here's
I'm.
Will.
If here's you're saying that I hold court more than you, 100%.
Yeah.
But I don't know. I think you talk just as much as I do, but it's just like the side. You don't want to talk to the table. You want to talk to a person at the table.
Yeah. I think I ask more questions.
Certainly that's true. That is a skill that you possess that I've been jealous of and learned from you over the years to ask better questions.
Yeah.
I wouldn't argue that at all. You ask exceptional questions.
I do, but sometimes I'm like, am I asking him because I don't want to talk? Maybe.
Maybe.
Anyway, so well, you talk more, but it's fine. That's
it's
what you
fine.
Do for a living.
Yes, I appreciate
great.
It. Okay.
So this time
what are we even arguing about? Can we get to this episode?
You were the one that said you don't talk more.
Okay.
Okay.
I want us to talk about perfectionism,
mm-hmm.
How it paralyzes,
mm-hmm.
like you've shared this before when we talked about your story, when I got to interview you, you talked about kind of this, like this trap you were in.
Mm-hmm.
Where you always you needed to be perceived as or to feel as you were perfect or you had the right answers or you had am I framing that?
I mean, I just as long as I could remember I like my parents didn't have to pay me for grades. They didn't have to get on to me for my grades. Like, you really need to study more. You know, I wanted the A. I wanted to get the best grade. I wanted to get the parts. I wanted to sing the notes right. I wanted to get first chair. I played the flute in band in middle school.
And then when'd you switch to the baton? The twirling thing?
I did at the same time. So in seventh grade, tried out to be a majorette.
Okay.
Eighth grade. You could only be a majorette seventh and eighth grade. I hadn't twirled long enough to try out in seventh grade.
Are you twirling the flute?
Are you kidding? You're being silly. No, you're twirling a baton.
Okay.
But you play the flute when it's like concert season, but marching season, you get to twirl. And it wasn't the kind of twirling where you're the only one out there. That's more like kind of show band. We are military marching band.
You're so proud of that.
I am. Foster Middle School in Longview, Texas. That's where I went.
Military.
The Dragons.
Military
and
marching.
Military marching.
Like A&M
like
does.
Fighting Texas Aggie Band, which is amazing.
They're incredible.
I think it's so cool to watch. Anyway, so you had like probably, I think we had like eight majorettes, and everyone had a line in the block of band members that you led. And then you had like head majorettes or whatever. I forgot what they were called. Drum majors. Anyway, so I played the flute. And then if you play in the band, you can try out to be a majorette. And that's what I did. Tried out, did the twirling thing, but played the flute. But I did always want to be first chair, even though, shout out to Kim Gore, if she watches this, she was always first chair. She was so good. And so then I was like, okay, as long as I'm second chair. She was my good friend, so I wasn't mad about her getting first chair. So I think there was always this drive to be good.
Is it, I said perfection.
Yeah.
Is it performance then?
It probably is a little bit of performance. There's some perfectionism in that too, where I didn't want to get things wrong.
Yeah.
Because if I got things wrong, it meant something's wrong with me.
Okay.
And that was scary to me to be wrong. And so I think perfectionism was an attempt to control and protect.
Okay. Your own heart.
My own heart from seeing that it's weak and imperfect.
Sure.
You know, and so I think it's just, it is a way to try to control your world. The perception of how you see others, how others see you and how you see yourself.
Yeah.
So that's how I would explain it. Now, in the middle of it, I just wanted to do great. Yeah. I just wanted to win. I wanted to do well.
Did you want to win or did you want to not lose?
I think both. I wanted to not lose, but I also wanted to win. I wanted to be good.
Yeah.
I wanted to be good enough. I wanted the grades. I wanted the praise, even though it wasn't all about that. I wanted to make the grades just for myself, but like an added bonus was being recognized.
Sure.
And getting some kind of praise or award. That was a motivation. I mean, I would call that just glory.
Yeah.
Like I wanted glory. And I didn't know that's what it was, but that's what I wanted. So. Yeah.
Hey, friends, quick pause to share about a ministry we deeply believe in, Global Christian Relief. Across more than 30 countries, places like Nigeria, Iran, India, and North Korea, our Christian family is facing real persecution for following Jesus. Global Christian Relief exists to close the distance between us and them. They invite us into real stories like names, faces, faith, so no Christian is isolated or forgotten. Through prayer and generosity, GCR provides emergency relief like food, shelter, and medicine. They rebuild churches and homes. They even offer trauma counseling and get scripture into the hands of believers who are hungry for God's word. When you join Global Christian Relief, you're not just giving to a cause, you're standing with family. And as you step into their stories, their courageous faith will strengthen yours. That reminds me of the phrase glory. I know we've, you know, prepared this doc for this. Luther famously distinguished between the theologian of glory and the theologian of the cross.
Yeah.
And mainly said the theologian of glory looks for God in success, strength, visible improvement. They believe that by climbing the ladder of spiritual disciplines and moral excellence, they can reach a version of themselves that's no longer broken.
Yeah.
How close is that?
Oh, it's very, I mean, it resonates so deeply because that's what, because I was a good girl too,
raised up
in the church, saved when I was eight or made a profession of faith when I was eight. And so I wanted to be a good girl. So not only did I want to make good grades and be first chair, I wanted to be a good girl. Yeah. I wanted to be, you know, had a little brother. I wanted to be the kid they didn't have to worry about, you know? And
your parents adored you.
They did. I was very loved.
You were very loved.
Very loved, very wanted.
Mm-hmm.
So was my brother, you know? So, but my brother did kind of interrupt the good thing I had going. Here I was basking in all the glory of being the only child.
Yep.
And then my brother comes in with severe colic. So I was like 3 and a half when he was born. So enough that like the world was pretty sweet. I had a good gig. And then this little, you know, 8-pound baby comes in just screaming his way, like causing chaos to my family. Bless his heart. He couldn't control it.
No, yeah.
But I think that did do something where I was like, ugh, you know, how do I secure my place here? And that's another thing that I think perfectionism, or at least in my experience of glory seeking. I think if I were to distill all of that, it would be just seeking glory, but my own glory.
Yeah.
It makes everyone an enemy and a competitor.
Yeah.
So it's hard to rejoice in anyone else's successes. Like even my friend Kim.
Yeah.
I mean, it was one more. I was just resigned that I was not as good
as Kim. You're like, you know what?
You know what, Kim, you can have it. But for the most part, you end up seeing people as competition and you don't get to rejoice in their accomplishments. It's a threat to you instead. And then even if you enjoy some accomplishment, it's only as long as that lasts until someone else does something amazing that overshadows what you just did.
Yeah.
You know, so it's very cheap. And so I think that's what, so more than, yes, there's this perfectionism to it, but it's just desire for glory that I don't need anyone or anything else, that I am self-sufficient, that I can be my own God. Yeah. But then I put Christian stuff on it.
Yeah. So how mean are you to you if that's your worldview?
Pretty mean. I mean, just never satisfied. I'll share here, like for a long time, even after having kids, like if I felt like I let someone down or I did something that I'm ashamed of, I would physically hit myself.
Yeah.
I was so fresh. I was like, how could you do that? Like, what are you, you should have known better. Just like this deep feeling of shame. And so, yeah, I mean, I was mean to myself because I had this high bar that no one can reach.
No one can, yeah.
Yeah. And so I was always disappointing myself. Never really comfortable in my own skin because it was scary to be myself because I knew I wasn't measuring up. So what if I could just pretend to be someone else's, a version of someone else?
Yeah.
Yeah.
And when did you, like, thank you for being honest about, like, even after kids, still kind of with the hitting yourself?
Yeah.
When did it start to really break down in you where you're like, no, I'm not okay.
Mm-hmm.
Something's off in me that address or have the Spirit address in me. Yeah. So when did that start happening?
Where it raised its head the most was in leading worship.
Yeah.
Music was always something I loved doing. I enjoyed leading worship. And I do think it's interesting, at this conference we were at just last week, one of the speakers talked about there's kind of this theme in the Bible of, like, there's this dream and then it dies and then the Lord resurrects it. And I think leading worship was this dream that I gotten a lot of my identity around, like that I tried to find my identity in music and leading worship. And I think that is a calling and a gift God does have on my life, but it had to die.
Yeah.
And I feel like it's only been in the last few years that it really went through a season where it died. And then now I feel like the Lord's resurrecting it.
Yeah.
And it's out of a place of joy and gratitude and not a place of, I've got to do it or I don't know who I am.
Yeah. Praise God.
But that was a place that a lot of that refining happened. So I was invited to sing on this this EP with a friend of mine who I just adored. I was like, if I could sing with her on her stuff, I would know I'm good enough. Like, that would just settle all arguments in my head. I am good enough.
I have arrived.
And I remember doing it. I mean, didn't have a great time because I was stressed about it the whole time. And then I didn't even get to enjoy that I was getting to do that.
Yeah.
I listened back to my part and I hated it.
Absolutely.
I thought it sounded terrible. And I think what it was is I didn't sound like me. I was trying to sound like her.
Yeah.
And that's when I was like, something's not right. And I really equate it to like someone that's struggling with body dysmorphia, where what other people are seeing and what you see in the mirror are very different things. And so I think what I was hearing, and I do think my voice has grown and I've grown in discovering my voice. In fact, I'm still taking voice lessons.
Yeah.
Like, I'm still trying to refine that skill. But it was like, it was not measuring up. So I was like, either everyone else is wrong or I'm wrong.
Yeah.
And so I was like, okay, there's something to that. So that's when I ended up going to Celebrate Recovery. And that was the beginning of seeing, oh my gosh, I've been doing this in various ways in my life as long as I can remember.
Yeah.
And it really did, for me, it was about glory. It was seeking my own glory and not the glory of God.
Yeah.
And we just are not meant to bask in our own glory, to ask others to bask in our own glory. It is a dim light compared to the surpassing greatness of the glory of God. And it's just, it's like moonlight.
Yeah.
It's cold. Nothing can grow under moonlight, you know? But the sun, it gives warmth. It gives growth. There's a difference. Yeah. And so that's when I really started realizing, okay, this is an issue and I'm not getting to experience all that God has for me because I'm so tied up in managing my own glory that I can't even truly worship God.
Yeah.
The very thing that I was trying to do.
Yeah. I would love to talk. I think what could be helpful in the real tension of this topic is, like, we go back to Luther, and Luther says there's the theologian of glory.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm up and to the right. I can have enough discipline. I can work hard enough. I can organize my life enough that I don't feel broken.
Yeah.
Then, the corresponding idea for that with Luther was the idea of the theologian of the cross, which he recognized that, like, a theologian of the cross recognizes that God is most profoundly met in weakness, suffering, and failure.
Yeah.
I think a thing I'd love for you to talk about, maybe us to talk about for a while here, is, okay, what does that actually look like?
Mm-hmm.
Like, I am, I have a job to do. I'm not, like, I don't spend all day praying and fasting. And right. I have meetings I've got to run. I've got initiatives. I've got tasks. I've got study. I've got all sorts of things that I'm supposed to be doing. I'm trying to raise kids with you, trying to love you like Christ loved the church. Mm-hmm. I'm trying to, what does this look like on the ground to not give into kind of the theologian glory mm-hmm. and striving, mm-hmm. but also to heed the scripture's admonition that he who does not work does not eat,
yeah.
and the one who doesn't support his family is worse than an unbeliever. Mm-hmm. So there's this idea, like, work hard, but don't strive.
Yeah.
How would you tease that out? Maybe think about your own story, because mm-hmm. like, You went to Celebrate Recovery and you started, mm-hmm. you went through steps and you're mortifying the flesh and you're still trying yeah. to raise kids and you're still putting up with me and you're still leading worship and still, yeah. so talk a bit about the wrestle of trying to become a theologian of the cross
yeah.
when you've been a theologian of glory mm-hmm. for, I mean, according to you, most of your life.
You know, on the outside, it could look exactly the same.
Yeah. Isn't that wild?
Yeah. So I think what it is, it really is a posture of the heart. It is the, it would be, so walking in obedience, doing the things I need to do to be the mom that I've been, but like this load off
yeah.
my back where it's, you know, when Jesus says, my burden is easy, you know, my yoke is easy, my burden is light. It's like, yes, because the most freeing thing I ever realized about what Jesus did for me was that simple, that first half of that simple way to say the gospel that Dr. Tim Keller was so famous for, where he said, he lived the life I couldn't live
yeah.
or I didn't live and died the death I deserved to die. So that first part of, I'd always thought about, you know, Jesus died for my sins and, you know, he atoned for my sins are covered, I have forgiveness in him, but I never thought about the imputation of righteousness to me, that he, when God looks at me, he sees Jesus and not me,
yeah.
not all the, my striving, not my failures, but Jesus did everything right that I couldn't do.
Yeah.
And so that was just a load off of me where it's like, I was able to admit when I was wrong. I was able to ask forgiveness. I was able to make amends. When you are striving for your own glory and that all depends on you, you can't do that.
No, yeah.
Because you're like, oh no, wait, if I did something wrong, then what does that make me? So then you explain it away, you blame somebody else. But if you are convinced of what Jesus has done for you and that you're weak and you need him and you need a savior and you need his righteousness, you get to say, I am so sorry, you know, that I failed in this way. Forgive me. And you can try again. But trying not in your own strength to save your reputation,
yeah.
but in a posture of gratitude of, I get another chance.
Yeah.
And I get to do this not in my own strength, but in God who gives me strength.
There's something about fresh air and trees and being outside that's really replenishing for me. And yet, I think I spend 90% of my time indoors in front of a screen, at my desk, above my garage, or up at the office at the Village Church. And so I was excited when Air Doctor, which is like this award-winning air purifier that really eliminates like 99.99% of all kind of allergens and viruses and smoke and mold and all that stuff that's in the air. They were actually voted best air purifier by Newsweek. 98% of Air Doctor customers agree that when they plug these things in, the home feels cleaner and healthier. And so Air Doctor Pro is sponsoring this episode of The Overcomers. And if you will go, you will get $300 off today. Comes with a 30-day money-back guarantee plus a 3-year warranty. I think that's like an $84, $85 value. And so you can go to airdoctorpro.com. That's AirDoctorPro.com and use the promo code Overcomers for $300 off any of their Air Doctor air purifiers. And so got one plugged in here. Love what it's done to my office. It has changed kind of the feel of things in my office. And so airdoctorpro.com, use the promo code Overcomers. I have a question. It's a complex question, so it's probably not fair to, but let me just get it out there and then we'll go from there. You were in every way when I met you, the golden child, like Allstate Baptist Choir. You sang, you had played and been a pretty good athlete in soccer. You were beautiful. You had a great friend group.
I'm just kidding.
Come on now. Let's not do that. And like you had the life where if you were around it, if you touched it, it tended to succeed and be beautiful. I'm wondering in this process, were you made, this feels like a date night question, honestly, because I don't know the answer. Did you find out, I'm actually weak at that. I'm not good at that. I don't want to pretend that I am. Mm-hmm. And then did you own that weakness in a way that it became a strength in ministry or in loving our kids or in trying to serve me and love me? Or see what I'm saying? It's a complex question.
So you're asking me whether things that I would do, even though I knew I was weak, but it would grow me?
Well, I think what I'm trying to ask, if I even know what I'm trying to ask, is...
Can you think of the answer?
No. Okay. I literally don't know. But what I'm thinking about, like if I think about my own life, I think about early on in pastoral ministry, all the models I had seen was that I had to be the best at everything. Like I had to understand the business side of it and I had to understand the operational side of it and the ministerial side of it.
Yeah.
And I had never been on a team when I first got to the village that actually goes, no. Like I'm terrible at that and it's okay that I'm terrible at that. And by turning that over to someone and owning my weakness, I actually get to step into who God made me and what God's made me to do.
Is this about laundry?
No, I would never. I've just resigned myself to be the one that folds laundry and puts it off.
I'm terrible at laundry. I can get it in the washer. I can get it in the dryer. But after that, who knows what's going to happen.
So you're not terrible. You've got two-thirds of the process.
So his gift, I'm going to let him use his gift by folding the clothes.
It's not my gift. I just need clean underwear.
I know.
All right.
Anyway, okay. Seriously, though. It's interesting. That reminds me of, there's a chapter in this book that's escaping me right now, where it's about the feeling, the heart, the emotions, that no emotion's bad because of what it can lead to. And I know everybody who loves, what's her name?
Brené Brown.
Brené Brown's like twitching. But shame can be good because it shows you that you're lacking and that produces humility. And it also leads to uniqueness and variety in acknowledging we need each other.
Yeah.
Like, and I had never heard that before, and I loved it. And I do think that is what I have discovered. One of the things, I mean, I've seen it in different areas of my life, but when it comes to leading worship, I wanted to be able to play and sing so that I could just be a one person, like no hindrance to.
You didn't want me to be able to play so we could like do that together? I'd do the BGVs.
I mean, if you could, sure.
Hey, weakness.
Anyway.
All right.
But the Lord showed me just the beauty of like leading a band and leaning on someone else, and that was better than me just doing it all by myself.
Yeah.
Like it was the teamwork. I enjoyed it more. And then even, or something else that I thought about when you were asking that. But just other areas of my life where I'm just like, okay, I can't do it. Yeah. And that's okay. And, but that person can't. Well, I would take Storied Provisions, the coffee shop, bookstore, gift shop that I just opened with my friend and neighbor, mm-hmm. Sarah. I couldn't have done it without her.
Yeah.
And I think I never would have even opened that or even tried to do it if I hadn't first recognized I don't have all that it takes, but I believe I'm going to run across someone who can help me.
Yeah.
And that God's put this on their heart too. And that was Sarah. I think before I would have been like, I want to do this. I'm hitting these roadblocks because I don't have all the information. I don't know what it takes to do this. And then I'd just give up. And so I think that's what's something that's beautiful, that weakness, because I know I can't do it all. I don't know the first thing about setting up a business, but Sarah does.
Yeah.
And so it's just, is that what you're asking?
Yeah, I think you're on it.
Okay, getting close.
Talk a little. No, I think you're on it. I think that's what I wanted to hear from you. And then I would love for you to talk about, because I think it'd be so helpful for people listening, but feel free to say, I'd rather not, and throw it back at something awkward for me.
Okay.
I would love for you to talk about the kind of mother you are, as opposed to kind of the picture perfect one that everybody sees on Instagram. Or maybe even like in Christian circles in particular,
yeah.
The picture of the perfect mom and then the pressure to be the perfect mom versus the reality of how you mother.
Yeah.
Which is beautiful and not perfect and messy. And so I'd love for you to just talk about your own, because we've had those talks. I know mm-hmm. we've had those talks where, you know, you got these moms with like five kids and they're always on the floor and they can't wait to homeschool all of them. And they, you know, it's just, but that
was not me.
That was not you.
Yeah. I mean, I think it even goes back to when I was expecting Audrey.
Yeah.
And you get every book. And back then it was the attachment theory, all the attachment theory things, like this is what you need to do to make sure they attach securely and all this stuff. And I remember just being so overwhelmed. I was like, there's just too much. And I just couldn't do it. And so
how about we just love this kid?
Yeah, I'm just going to do the best that I can, pray for her. And we're all going to learn. She's our first kid. Yeah. We've apologized so much. Like
so much.
You get the least sanctified, least experienced version of us
poor
as parents,
yeah.
you know? And I'm a firstborn. So, I think it was like Kim Gore in first year. It really was.
All over again.
All over again. It was like, I can't do that.
Yeah.
I cannot be the perfect mom. I know it. Like whatever the perfect mom is, I cannot manage.
Well, and that's nailing it right there. Like, what is the perfect
mom?
Yeah,
what is the perfect
mom? Right? Give me a break.
Like, I didn't have like the snacks that they needed. I was super inconsistent with trying to do some kind of, you know, devotional with them or, you know, reading a book at night. I didn't. Bedtime routine, what's that? Like I tried, but it was always something different, you know? And then even as they've gotten older, there's some things I wish I'd done differently,
sure.
But for the most part, just trying to, what I wanted was to be connected to my kid, to know their heart, to know what's going on in their lives, and then also to help them grow in what God's called them to do. Like anything that they found their hearts loving that was, I think, good for them. So for Audrey, like horses, yeah. Like I loved to see my kids do things that they enjoyed and it gave them some like confidence.
Sure.
And so for, you know, Audrey, it was horses, loved watching her do that. She had a gift for that. She still does read. It was football for a while, but I mean, just him getting to work with his hands.
Yeah, always his hands. Yeah.
Like super smart when it comes to that. Nora, it was dance and then volleyball. And then, you know, just getting to see my kids do things. I feel the pleasure of God, the chariots of fire.
Yeah.
I can't remember. I wanted my kids to find those things that stirred their hearts. And then I wanted And then I prayed for them and I talk about the Lord with them like I talk to anybody about the Lord and what I'm learning about him. But I'm not a super structured mom and I could not do homeschool. Like I tried it, the part-time homeschool, not my gig. It was... Everybody got ADHD at the Chandler
house.
It's
so true. It's,
and so
that was a tough little season, but it was a good try. We gave it the old college try.
It was a good try, and it was
and too many tears.
It was fine. Yeah, mainly mine.
How are you dealing with, like, I don't want to lose sight of, like, you're having to navigate all of this while being an extremely public figure in our world. And so how did you process maybe perceived expectations of others, knowing this is your bent to begin with?
I think I had the Lord protected me and made me pretty oblivious. I think there were only a few things that I cared about what people cared, like what people thought about me in, and that wasn't one of them.
Okay.
For whatever reason,
what
it
grace.
Wasn't, and it was just the Lord's protection. Yeah, because I think I just knew this mom thing is harder than it looks.
Yep.
I'm okay being second chair at it.
That's right.
I really am. So I was pretty oblivious to it. There were other places where I was more aware of what people thought.
Okay.
And that just wasn't one of them. And I don't know why.
Yeah. We'll just chalk that up to the Lord's grace.
Yeah.
If someone's watching this, we haven't done a lot of this in between Sundays. Yeah. Someone's watching this and maybe pastor's wife, maybe not a pastor's wife at all. Maybe just another woman or man that they're just bent this way. It's the theologian of glory. If I could just have enough spiritual discipline or build enough structure into my life, or then I won't feel broken anymore. Mm-hmm. How would you encourage them to move towards becoming a theologian of the cross?
I think I would encourage them to be okay with weakness. The very beginning of freedom for me was I was still in college or like in between, and I was in someone's house, and they had written 2 Corinthians 12:9 as like a border on the wall, and like, you know, 90s borders, wallpaper borders. But this was someone had written it, and it was, my grace is sufficient for you, for my power is made perfect in weakness. And that would be my call to you, is like, his grace truly is enough. And it goes on a couple of verses later to say, for when I am weak, then I am strong. It's not then he is strong. It's like, then I am strong.
Yeah.
So my appeal to you would be to surrender, to give up. And it's going to be so freeing, disorienting, but it's worth it. It's okay to be weak. It's okay to not have it all together. It's okay to be weak. That's what I would encourage you. And then, that first step in recovery, that I was powerless to change, like to change my circumstances, to change myself. That first step was just completely disorienting in the best way.
Yeah.
It was such a good confession to say, I cannot do this. I am powerless. Only the Lord can do this. So that would be my encouragement to you, is to embrace weakness so that you can see his grace and power and work in your life. For when you are weak, then you are strong. And it's okay to be powerless and to look for the one who has done it all on your behalf.
Yeah, that's good, babe. Love it. Love your testimony. It's powerful.
Thanks, babe.
Love you.
Love you too.
All right. Thank you guys for tuning in to this episode of Between Sundays with the Chandlers.
You gonna make a jingle?
Oh, that's not my world, but you should write one.
Maybe so.
In the comments.
Right.
Lauren, write the jingle. See ya. Hey guys, thank you so much for tuning in to The Overcomers. I just pray your heart is always encouraged in the Lord. Really, the ministry I feel God's called me to in this season is to be one that's encouraging you, telling you the Lord sees you, reminding you of the opportunities that we have as the people of God in this day. And so The Overcomers podcast is one of the ways I do that. Another way is that I'm sending out a monthly newsletter. And in that, I've got a little audio link for kind of things I'm thinking about and wrestling through that I'm not necessarily preaching on. And so in the show notes is a link where you can go and sign up for that monthly email. And so, if The Overcomers is encouraging you, I would encourage you then to click on that link, sign up for the newsletter. And it's a way for me to further encourage you as you seek to live as overcomers in this current moment.